You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO around the campfire. Become a member during Camp KBOO's Summer Drive, taking place now through June 29th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Wednesday, May 28th at 5:30 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting. It will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Tonight, our guests are Wes Holling of the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee and Brian Denning of Workers Organizing Workers. Welcome, Wes and Brian.
Pleasure to be here.
Great to be here.
The Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee, affectionately known as EWOC, has been around since 2020, and the Workers Organizing Workers initiative, known as WOW, has been around for about a year. Both are projects of the Democratic Socialists of America. Both are national initiatives which provide trainings and mentoring in workplace organizing, EWOC for those trying to build power and possibly a union in their workplace, and WOW for those who want to get a job in a strategic industry and organize. So Wes, let's start with the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee. Why is it called Emergency and how did it get started?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Emergency and Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee started initially in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. We have been around for about 5 years now. That was the first thing that sort of kicked off the need for something like EWOC. We had workers who were on the front lines of the pandemic, service workers, retail workers, people who didn't have personal protective equipment, people who didn't have sick time, the things that we as workers kind of need to survive in order to do these jobs. And they had no power at work to get what they needed. And that's where EWOC started, was in trying to help these workers learn to organize in the first place. Because obviously, if you are a worker who has a union already, you have some avenue for advocating for these things, for organizing on the job, for demanding what you need. But if you have nothing like that, you have no resources, and you don't know where to begin. And there wasn't really much of a resource for workers like that at the time. So initially, we were set to help workers who were on the front lines, as we were referring to them at the time more often, emergency workers, to learn the basics of workplace organizing. And that's what we've been doing ever since. So as the pandemic sort of receded in its intensity, I guess you could say, we still found that we had a lot of workers coming to us with the same basic questions, the same needs, the same, you know, they all deserved protections at work. And we found that the emergency and emergency workplace organizing committee has come to mean initially protection from COVID-19, and then over time, whatever the emergency is at your workplace. You have a boss that's harassing you, you have cuts, you know, from the top to streamline your workplace, whatever the demand is that's become an emergency for you and your coworkers, we are here to help.
So the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee is a project of not only the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, but UE, the United Electrical, Radio and Machine Workers Union. The UE is a much older than DSA. Where did it come from, and what role does it play in the current labor movement?
Yeah, so the UE, I have to say, full disclosure, I am not a UE member. So this is coming as more of a fan than anything else. But the UE, which, as you said, is the United Electrical, Radio, and Machinists Union, got its start in the mid-1930s. They have been traditionally one of the more militant, active, rank-and-file unions in the country, primarily focused on electrical workers, but of course a lot of other sectors as well. And in the time that they've been around, they have been excised from the AFL-CIO, or rather, they left during the heyday of the Red Scare, accusations of communists dominating the union and not towing the line for some other sort of policies of the AFL-CIO, and have been independent ever since. And with that level of independence has come an ability to organize in new and different ways. And one of those ways, of course, is EWOC, helping found it along with the Democratic Socialists of America to start this project of, and this is something that I think Brian might touch on as well with workers organizing workers, but a direct worker-to-worker organizing model, rather than calling your local union or the national union or whatever and saying, help, I need a union, and then expecting staff to swoop in and do it for you. UE and DSA and EWOC believe that direct worker-to-worker organizing is a powerful and sustainable model for building power at work. And so we've sort of channeled that history of UE into our work as well.
Wes, how did the DSA and the UE come together to create EWOC?
So at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, members of the Democratic Socialists of America National Political Committee, at the time, some of them had reached out to UE to see if they could have some sort of union backing for this initiative. Important to get something like that rather than being concerned individuals standing outside of the labor movement, getting some sort of buy-in from a union that had been doing something like this for decades was really important. We wanted union members, we wanted union organizers to be involved in this project in order to not just give the appearance of legitimacy, but actually help shape the educational content of what we were doing. Because at the end of the day, EWOC is not a union. EWOC is an educational project to help workers learn all of the steps that they need to organize at work, to even form their own union, to join an existing union, to build power at work as workers. And so the UE's sort of proud tradition of that was really important to us. And that's where that sort of connection became almost obvious, that who we would reach out to for a connection like that.
So you mentioned the steps. Walk us through a typical EWOC call and follow-up. What would it look like?
Yeah, so we say that if there's 100 steps to joining a union or starting a union, then EWOC can get you through the first 50. And so that starts from the very basics. You don't know anything about organizing or being in a union. That's where we come in. And so that means, how do you talk to your coworkers? It seems like an obvious question, but if you've been in a workplace where you kind of know people on a surface level, then it can be a little intimidating to approach somebody about something as weighty as organizing or even unionizing. So we discuss, how to have those one-on-one conversations. We talk about developing leadership, because of course, once you have some people who are involved in your effort, it's important to determine who's everybody going to actually listen to. So developing leaders, building that organizing committee, that core of your effort, the main actors within your unionization effort that other people may listen to, that can bring other people into the fight. And then we walk through what the arc of the campaign is. A lot of every workplace is unique, but a lot of unionizing campaigns follow a fairly similar trajectory. You continue to have those organizing conversations. You see where people are at in your workplace. You map and chart it to say, these are all the departments, these are all the people who are within them, and this is where they kind of fall in terms of how supportive or not supportive they are of the effort. And then possibly most importantly, we help people inoculate against what we call the boss campaign. Bosses have only so many tricks in their toolbox to try and bust your union. And thankfully, by now, a lot of good union organizers know how to counteract those moves. And that's what we call inoculation. And the boss will try and stop you, and you can get around them, you can beat them at their own game. And that's what we try and help organizing workers do. So those are sort of our four main steps in our training, is developing that leadership, having those organizing conversations, building your organizing committee, and then inoculating against what your boss is going to try and do.
EWOC offers regular online trainings. What do they include?
So the trainings include the things that I just mentioned, those four components. We also, because some subjects are becoming more important over time to the people that come to us, that we've begun to incorporate them into our sort of bread and butter trainings, like how to organize for climate change on the job. For example, we had a restaurant on the East Coast that was suffering from severe heat 1 year. They had no air conditioning. The boss was not interested in spending the extra money to get air conditioning, and people were struggling inside to, not pass out from the extreme heat. And that's just going to get worse as climate change continues. So the only option left is to organize. And so we've taken some lessons like those and incorporated that into our trainings as well, because it's something we talk about, the emergency and emergency workplace organizing committee. If you are passing out from heat exhaustion on the job, that's definitely an emergency. And so we're trying to keep those sorts of demands in mind when we do these trainings. And so in addition to those sort of bread and butter issues, we're incorporating things like that as well.
Great. Well, let's switch now to move to Brian. And tell us, Brian, about the workers organizing workers. Where did it come from?
Yeah, workers organizing workers is a project of the National Labor Commission, and it came out of first of all, a need to kind of offer broad services to all the chapters in how to help bring in workers. And so amongst many DSA chapters, there's lots of labor work going on, but the NLC saw there was a need to have a one-stop operation that could help show different chapters and people engaged in DSA how to salt the workplace, how to organize in the workplace, and train and mentor that kind of work. And so that's the origin. It also came out of the last convention. The National Labor Commission saw that need, and some of the work that they proposed there sparked this plan.
What does DSA mean by strategic industry?
A strategic industry is composed of workers who are in a important part of the economy that doesn't function without them. So an example of a strategic industry that the workers organizing worker project focuses on especially are workers at Amazon, workers at Starbucks, workers at Delta, education workers, But there's an even more broad concept, I think, that could be considered here, again, about strategic. You know, we can all think back to the pandemic when you know, essential workers were a real thing. You know, grocery store workers, railway workers, all these things are important and very critical parts of our economy. I could also think back to, you know, in the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King was going to meet with sanitation workers, and you can think about how essential sanitation workers are in our country and how those function. But again, essential workers and strategic industries go hand in hand. The idea being you're looking for a place where there's leverage in the economy that can't be easily offshored or easily removed from the economy or automated.
All right. So how is workers organizing workers methodology part of a long labor movement tradition and yet not practiced by most mainstream labor unions?
Salting, which is the taking a job for the purpose of organizing in a workplace that does not currently have a union, that tradition was heavily used back in the 1920s and 1930s in the United States and earlier, especially when there weren't unions and there was a need to actually build organizations on the shop floor from the ground up. So that salting practice has been used by some unions still today. So Unite Here is an example, representing a lot of hotel workers and before that garment workers across the United States. Their practice of it is actually pretty impressive because they have a very high win rate, in part because of that. But the tradition that it came out of was basically the idea that the strength of any union starts with and ends with really the power on the shop floor. So you're going to need workers throughout the shop floor, building an organizing committee, building power, listening to workers, recruiting workers, and bringing around a campaign.
And can you say anything about why that's not a major practice by most mainstream labor unions at this point?
I'll say my own impression of this, and I think it's pretty broadly shared across labor, is that, you know, a number of organizers and unions have told me that basically they spend more time picking and choosing and rejecting who they're going to actually organize than they actually spend organizing in some cases, depending on the union, right? But like, there's a lot of unions that are very picky and don't necessarily want to organize certain workers in certain industries because it's, they don't think it's profitable, they think there's too high a turnover, they think there's other issues, and it becomes picking and choosing, where in the same way we've kind of divorce ourselves from a democracy where it seems like instead of voters choosing, you know, the politicians are choosing the voters. I think that's the same kind of thing where you have a chicken before the egg kind of effect, where the labor unions end up deciding, well, we don't want to organize these workers, we just want those workers over here. Whereas, you know, the class aspect of this fight and the aspect of actually winning things long-term for workers means a solidarity across the class and the effort to organize as many workers as possible. And that's a very different theory of change, I think. Now, again, we're still talking about strategic industries, and I think in some degrees, most unions would agree with those assessments. Like, they want to organize strategic industries for sure, and often have. But I think beyond that, it's just organizing for some unions is not always the highest priority, unfortunately. And also, I would say that the big impact in the change in unions, especially in the 1950s after the Taft-Hartley Act, which said that people who were socialists and communists and anarchists didn't have a place in unions, really, especially in union leadership, really shifted the direction of unions towards labor bureaucracy and towards the idea of a service model where the methods of negotiating a contract were about anything except member engagement, unfortunately. And that's kind of a reverse of where strength actually often truly lies, at least for people who have a focus on the rank and file strategy and a focus on how a union's power is actually built.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. Tonight we're talking with Wes Holing of the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee and Brian Denning of Workers Organizing Workers. If you like this show, you find it useful, consider donating to our community-sponsored, listener-supported, non-corporate radio station, KBOO. Go to kboo.fm and donate now. Also, you're invited to come to a second renter's town hall and get-together for the Renter's Bill of Rights, sponsored by pdxrenterpower.com. Five new city councilors endorsed the Renters Bill of Rights while running for office. Let's decide how we push to make these reforms a reality for the whole city of Portland. Meet other renters, talk about our issues, to enjoy a social morning, and help build renter power. Light refreshments provided. That's Sunday, June 1st, 2 to 4 p.m. at the Levin Community Center, 5431 Northeast 20th Avenue. That's a renter's town hall on June 1st. Go to pdxrenterpower.com for more information. Well, I noticed that the DSA has prioritized as strategic industries Amazon and Starbucks, which have been, for years, the mainstream labor movement has been hands-off. Like, these workers are not organizable. And it wasn't really until the workers themselves started to self-organize that unions started getting interested in. And that's just an example of what you're talking about.
Yes, that's very true. In both those cases, those movements were often started by SALTs, especially in the case of Starbucks and in the case of Amazon. Workers said, we're going to go in. And in the case of Amazon, some of those DSA members or having been associated with DSA. But it's a laboratory in some ways, right? Like, a lot of unions have been struggling on the back foot for decades. And so this is an opportunity to change that equation and bring in a lot of people who are interested in not just getting a job, but like, hey, I'm here for a reason beyond just a paycheck or to make my boss richer, right? I'm here because there's something more to fight for. And not only do I deserve better in my workplace, but all my coworkers deserve better too. And I'm willing to fight for them. And I think that's the exciting part of this project that we're doing, and why it is inspiring to me and why I engage in it.
How do workers find and get involved with WOW? And when they do get involved, what kind of political education and training do they get?
Go out to workers, that's all one word, .org. And that will that's the website we've got set up through the National Labor Commission. And that gives a lot of information there about how to sign up and get more information. We do a lot of trainings mass trainings usually over Zoom. And we also help connect people who have decided to SALT with training and with mentors, as well as with support locally. If they're engaging in a campaign, we connect with other SALTs and help them build an organizing committee. The political aspect you're talking about, I would say the political education is a part of it, but that is mostly focused on what does it mean to have solidarity with workers? What does it mean in this fight to actually empower workers? I think a big part of organizing and training organizers is the perspective of how you come in and what your purpose is there and how you're relating to workers. And, you know, Daisy Pitkin speaks about this, and she's an amazing organizer who did work in Arizona with laundry workers in the early 2000s. She's now in the Starbucks campaign at the national level. But she talks just a lot about the relationship to the work and how you are orienting to workers and how you're centering them, right? Like, I think the big issue is sometimes people come into organizing and thinking they're going to save people, and that's not a bad place to start. Like, you want to help, right? But none of us are saviors. We're just all workers and people. And so the idea is, how do you not center yourself and make sure you're centering workers and centering the work itself? And that's a bit of a political question sometimes, maybe not the most political. I'd say that a lot of the rest of it is just that we've developed a pretty extensive training program. Personally, I was involved in helping build out an entire SALT training manual for the DSA, National Labor Commission, with input and feedback from a lot of people, including Jamie Partridge, especially on running job fairs as a way to bring in people. But with direct feedback from at least 10 or 12 different people involved in SALTing in Amazon and Starbucks and other places to give feedback on what they needed and were looking for when they were doing the SALTing work. So that our big thing is support and making sure it's effective. The website offers a place for people to sign up on there and also gives more information about what's expected out of the program, what we're looking for, and the work we do.
All right. So the Democratic Socialists of America has grown by more than tenfold in the last 10 years. Yet compared to the socialist movement of the 30s and 40s, it has little presence and influence in U.S. labor movement. How do you see EWOC and WOW changing that? And this is a question that I'd like to hear from both of you.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I can speak for myself, and then I can say what I've seen when I talk to SALTs. Salting radically changes relationships on the shop floor and can lead to, I think, a greater class consciousness. And I think the more people that we're able to expose to salting and get involved in salting, that's going to build out, in my estimation, a militant aspect of the labor movement that can really help sustain us in the years to come. We want workers who understand the stakes and have a class consciousness and are able to actually engage in that fight. And I think this is the project that we're attempting to do by building that at the rank and file level, where we don't have to depend on any one union and or depend on any one central place. I think this can be a very effective way of building out that consciousness. There's only about 10% density in unions in the United States, unfortunately. But that means if we're careful and we're working hard to get jobs in those industries, that we can be that movement and we can help build it out and make it much larger and willing to fight.
And how does this build the socialist movement within the labor movement? Can you say something about that, or what you mean by socialism, perhaps?
I would say that fighting for your class is central to what being a socialist is, and I think there's a lot of that happens in this work, is recognizing that it's not just you, it's you and your coworkers, that you're being divided intentionally by a ruling class, and that fighting back is liberating and empowering, and it's what makes a difference between being ground down by the system and actually rising up and changing the system.
Yeah, I'll underscore what Brian said, and I'll kind of add to that. Something that we see in EWOC is people coming to us who are interested in organizing, and they have questions along the way about how to even start talking to their coworkers. And it's easy to imagine a situation in which all of your coworkers are down for the fight and you all just join in together, and it's very straightforward. But of course, we know that's not the case. And as Brian said, you know, actual organizing changes you. And we see people come to us and say, some of my coworkers are racist or sexist or homophobic or some kind of, you know, have some kind of bigoted views, or maybe not even actively that, they're just have kind of retrograde views. And how can I talk to this guy? How can I connect with him? And what we found is, and this is nothing new for us, and it's nothing specific to our work, but I do think it's very representative of the power of labor organizing, which is that, as Brian said, it changes you. You know, you have a common struggle, you have a common enemy, and then once you begin to see that fight materialize in something, once you begin to see change happen on the job, then the person who you may have thought was not your ally, your comrade, your friend even, maybe that changes. Maybe they begin to see people who look like you in a slightly different light. And we do see that sort of change. It's something that is very transformative. And I feel like it's something that we don't see a lot in the rest of our lives as often as we do in labor organizing.
Wes, how can our listeners connect with EWOC? And Brian, how can our listeners connect with WOW?
I'm so glad you asked, Laura. No, I really am, because I feel like we get questions from a lot of workers who they don't know where to start. You know, one of our organizers once said that EWOC is the only help I need a union hotline in the country, and we do it on the budget of a moderately successful hot dog stand. You know, we are the kind of the only game in town for this sort of thing, and we want to talk to anyone who's interested in forming a union. So the best place to start, of course, you can hit up our website. It's very easy to remember. It's workerorganizing.org. Everything you need is there. You can sign up for our trainings, which we do every couple of months. Our next one is in July. You can sign up for that there. We also offer direct support. If you have an emergency in your workplace, you need organizing support, you can fill out our Get Support form, and an organizer will contact you within 48 hours. We will get you started immediately if that's the sort of level of support you need. And if you're interested, training is a great way to go too. I'll add as well, EWOC is hosting its very first conference at the end of June in Detroit, Michigan. It's the first that we know of conference devoted specifically to new workplace organizing. So if you are local to Michigan, if you are involved in new workplace organizing as a union staffer or a rank and file worker or anything in between, we highly encourage you to come to that. And you can also find out more about that at the website workerorganizing.org.
And so for WOW, you can go to workersorganizingworkers.org, all one word, and there's a sign-up sheet there. If you're interested in learning more about what salting is and getting a person to contact you and follow up, if you